Of the verses, Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 11. For I am with thee, saith the Lord, to save thee. Though I make a full end of the nations to which I have scattered thee, yet will I not make a full end of thee. But I will correct thee in measure and will not leave thee altogether unpunished. You may be seated. This is just one verse of scripture, but it tells a very unpopular story. For it tells that all the countries of the world are not equal in the eyes of God. It says that Yahweh is with some group of nations for the purpose of saving them. And he makes the promise that although he will make a full end of all the nations that he has scattered his people to, yet he will not make a full end of them. He adds that he will punish them, but he will not see them totally destroyed. Who are the nations that God will not make a full end of? Well, that's the story that is told throughout the Bible. But before I begin this sermon, did you see the GOP debate last Tuesday night? Did you see it? I saw about 20 minutes of it in total, although I'm not sure of the 20 minutes, going from television to television set in the place I work, so I can see the TV. It seemed that the only questions I heard were about Donald Trump's stand on not allowing any more Muslim refugees into the country. They spent a lot of time on that. But I didn't hear the whole GOP debate. However, there was one part that made me just flabbergasted. It was when the announcer said that he had a question from Facebook. The camera then focused on a Mexican-type young woman who asked the following question, which was addressed to all the candidates. The question was, if the Bible states that we need to embrace those in need, then how can we justify not accepting refugees? But the Bible does not say what the person asked who was on Facebook. She was a mixed-race person. The Bible does not say that we need to embrace everyone in need, especially Muslim refugees. We should not accept letting Muslims into our country according to the Bible. For example, Nehemiah 13:3. Now it came to pass when they had heard the law that they separated from Israel all the mixed multitude. It is the direct opposite of what the Jew Ruth Marcus said in her column. That's my last sermon that I gave. The stranger who resides with you shall be to you as one of your citizens. You shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. She had the wrong use of the word stranger than was in the Bible. The word strangers have a different meaning in the language from which they are translated in. The problem is in the translation. Reread my last sermon if you've forgotten, as it is a very important topic to understand. Now I'm going to tell you a true story that happened to me this past week. Last week I met a man who was a sales clerk for a store that I was in, and he had on his shirt the name of a seminary. So I asked him, did you go to the seminary that is written on your shirt? The man answered, yes, I did. And he gave the name of the seminary, which I do not remember. I couldn't even read it. It just kind of crumbled up. But he gave me the name of the seminary, which is located in Seattle, Washington. He said it's one of the few seminaries that teaches Calvinism. He said that he was a member of a local Presbyterian church. I pursued on. I then asked him, did his church preach Calvinism? Which all Presbyterian churches used to, but they don't anymore. To which he replied, yes, they do. And he added, only 1% of the churches in America now teach that doctrine. I replied, that is astounding, because most of the churches in our nation's beginning taught a Calvinistic doctrine. Well, he was really surprised that I even knew this little bit of history and that I even knew what a Calvinist believed. So he quickly responded, the Pilgrims were Calvinist, as well as many Presbyterians, Lutherans, and some Baptists. But the Episcopalian Church was not. He then added, I am a teacher of religion at Northern Kentucky University, and I just do this sales clerk job as a hobby. I asked him, how did you get from the state of Washington to Northern Kentucky? He answered, I married a Southern Baptist. A Southern Baptist, I replied. This conversation is going. A Southern Baptist, I replied, they just passed a racial reconciliation document at their summer convention. I know, he answered, but we are all from one family. We are all descended from the same husband and wife. There's only one family on the earth. What? I said, I disagree. But before I could utter another word, he said, you don't believe the Bible, for it says that the whole earth was flooded. We all come from Noah and Adam. There is only one race. He again repeated, you don't believe the Bible, for it says the flood destroyed the world. I was walking towards the door when this last exchange began, and since we were the only two people in the store at the time, I turned around and walked back towards him, saying, if you don't believe an entire world flood, then you don't believe there is any civilization that is older than 4,500 years old. I don't think he'd ever heard of the statement that I just made, as he quickly replied, I love arguing with someone who has a different view. Goodbye. Well, that was kind of strange, I thought, as I walked out the door. For he said that he loved arguing with someone who has a different view, but he didn't argue with me more than 5 seconds before he said goodbye. This man was a Calvinist. A Calvinist, one who believes in the TULIP doctrine. T, total depravity. Man cannot do anything to save himself. U, unconditional election. God did not choose everyone. L, limited atonement. God did not die for everyone. I, irresistible grace, only the elect receive grace. And P, perseverance of the saints, once saved, always saved. It began during the Protestant Revolution. Martin Luther, the man credited with beginning the revolution, was a believer in these 5 points. I know what they believe because I was a Calvinist from about 22 years of age till I became a Christian identity believer. I now understand the scriptures teach covenant theology. We have a completely different gospel than the Calvinist. For the Calvinists believe that all the covenants that are made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are all considered Old Testament covenants and are made with the Jews. It just goes to show that the Calvinists are just as wrong as the Arminians. I would say that the Calvinists are closer to the truth than their adversaries, but they are both wrong. Election and the sovereignty of God is addressed by the Calvinist, but they have our God choosing the wrong people. They are wrong because they teach a universal doctrine. Calvinism says that God elected a people from all races from before the foundation of the world. While the other, Arminianism, says that the people of the world can choose to have Jesus come into their life. The Arminian says we are wrong because we do not believe in the sovereignty of man. The Calvinists say we are wrong because we believe that God elected a racial seed, not individuals of all races. So where does this lead? Our enemies are the present so-called churches that are leavened with Jewish propaganda and lies. Now I'm going to talk about World War II. The Jews are scattered throughout the entire world. They live in most of the countries of the earth. So according to Wikipedia, the number of Jews in each of the countries are, now I use Mark's title, Israeli, 6,102,200. It's about the same as the United States, 6,700,000 United States. And the European Union has 1,103,300. And it shows France, 475,000. I'm not going to read all these down here. But you can see how many Jews live in these countries. And there's 81 countries besides these countries that are under 10,000 each. So it's just showing that the Jews live in a large number of countries. But, you know, over the past centuries, they were what? They were expelled out of over 109 countries and cities. This is one reason why the Jews are in favor of international trade. It's because they're global. And, you know, they used this asset in fighting a war. But do you remember who declared war first in World War II? It was the Jews that declared war against Germany, not the other way around. The Jews were the first to proclaim war against anyone. They publicly said on March 24th, 1933, that they were at war with Germany. That shocked me. It just clobbered me. I'd never heard that in school. This was when the war really started, not 1939 as the history books tell us, 6 years before the actual war started, according to the history books. Few people know the facts about the singular event that helped spark what ultimately became known as World War II. Notice the International Jewish Declaration of War on Germany shortly after Adolf Hitler came to power and well before any official German government sanctions or reprisals against Jews were carried out. 1933. The March 24, 1933 issue of the Daily Express of London described how Jewish leaders, in combination with powerful international Jewish financial interests, had launched a boycott of Germany for the express purpose of crippling her already precious, precarious economy in the hope of bringing down the new Hitler regime. Boycotts. There's been a lot of boycotts in past history, which is an act of war. It was only then that Germany struck back in response. Thus, if truth be told, it was worldwide Jewish leadership, not the Third Reich, that effectively fired the first shot in the Second World War. Prominent New York attorney Samuel Untermyer, one of the leading agitators in the war against Germany, described the Jewish campaign as nothing less than a holy war. Holy war? You remember Samuel Untermyer, don't you? He was the one who was the lawyer for President Wilson who paid his mistress and her husband $40,000 of his own money to keep the extramarital affair between President Wilson and her quiet. In exchange for this amount of money, Samuel Untermyer asked that he be able to pick a candidate for the Supreme Court. He picked Louis Brandeis, the first Jew on the court. Two, he was also influential in convincing President Wilson to enter World War I. And three, to sign the Federal Reserve Papers that established the Third National Bank in the United States. What a deal. Remember your history. In 1791, Rothschild agent Alexander Hamilton got the United States to charter a bank for 20 years. In 1811, the charter was refused by Congress. This was the reason for the War of 1812 between the United States and England. That was the war where the White House was burnt down to the ground. This caused the Second National Bank, which started in 1816 to pay the bills of the War of 1812. And then in 1836, under President Andrew Jackson, Jackson paid off all the money borrowed to fight the War of 1812. He ran for the president on the slogan, Jackson and no bank. He called the bankers, "You are a den of vipers." He said, "I intend to expose you, and by the eternal God, I will rout you out." It sounds to me like Andrew Jackson knew a little bit of the scriptures. Jackson said there'd be a revolution by morning if the people knew what the bankers were doing to them. There'd be another revolution in the morning if the people ever found out what they were doing to them. In 1932, he said that foreign stockholders controlling our currency were more formidable and dangerous than the naval and military power of the enemy. My question is, was President Jackson correct or not? What would he have said if he were alive when the head of the demonstrations that the Jews put on boycotting German-made goods? On March the 12th, 1933, the American Jewish Congress announced a massive protest at Madison Square Gardens for March 27th. At that time, the commander-in-chief of the Jewish war veterans called for an American boycott of German goods. In the meantime, on March 23rd, 20,000 Jews protested at New York City Hall, and rallies were staged outside the North German Lloyd and Hamburg American shipping lines, and boycotts were mounted against German goods throughout shops and businesses in New York City. Where were my parents when all this happened? Why didn't they know that they were boycotting German goods? They should have known that. According to the newspaper, the Express said that Germany was now confronted with an international boycott of its trade because Jews are all different countries. In London, New York, Paris, and Warsaw, Jewish businessmen are united to go on an economic crusade. This truly could be described as the first shot fired in the Second World War. The truth about the Jewish war on Germany has been suppressed. By what? Most histories of the period. And then I'll show you the newspaper article again. Judea declares war on Germany. Jews of all the world unite in action. International Jewry. Boycott of German Jews. It's hard to read it right here, but it's March 24th, 1933. Boycott Nazi Germany. Look at all these people. And it just says that the practice of politicians of states heavily indebted, they don't call it boycott anymore, they call it economic sanctions. I want you to listen carefully to the words of Samuel Untermyer that he gave in a radio broadcast on WABC New York on August 6, 1933. It was reported in the New York Times the next day. Here it goes. Each of you, Jew and Gentile, see, Jew and Gentile, alike, who has not already enlisted in this sacred war, should do so now and here. It is not sufficient that you should buy no goods made in Germany. You must refuse to deal with any merchant or shopkeeper who sells any German-made goods or who patronizes German ships or shipping. We will undermine the Hitler regime and bring the German people to their senses by destroying their export trade on which their very existence depends. This is 1933. There's no Holocaust even happened yet. And then remember Theodor Kaufmann in his diabolical anti-Germanic hate book, Germany Must Perish, accused the Germans of pursuing a policy of world domination and advocated their complete annihilation and the territorial dissertation of their nation. I'm asking you, did this happen? Is it still happening? Are they trying to completely destroy the German people? And there's the book, Germany Must Perish. The attacks on Germany did not cease. The worldwide Jewish leadership became ever the more belligerent and worked itself into a frenzy. An international Jewish boycott conference was held in Amsterdam to coordinate the ongoing boycott campaign. It was held under the auspices of the self-styled World Jewish Economic Federation, of which famous New York City attorney and longtime political power broker Samuel Untermyer was elected president. Upon returning to the United States in the wake of the conference, Untermyer delivered a radio speech in which he said the following remarks. Untermyer's inflammatory oratory called for a sacred war against Germany, making the flat-out allegation that Germany was engaged in a plan to exterminate the Jews. Germany has been converted from a nation of culture into a veritable hell of cruel and savage beast. I'd say anybody of German origin would turn against their Christian brother like that. Well, Untermyer said, "We owe it not only to our persecuted brethren, but to the entire world, to now strike in self-defense a blow that will free humanity from a repetition of this incredible outrage. Now or never, must all the nations of the earth make common cause against the slaughter, starvation, and annihilation, fiendish torture, cruelty, and persecution that are being inflicted day by day upon these men, women, and children. When the tale is told, the world will confront a picture so fearful in its barbarous cruelty that the hell of war and the alleged Belgian atrocities pale into insignificance as compared to this devilish, deliberately cold-blooded, planned, and already partially executed campaign for the extermination of a proud, gentle, loyal, law-abiding people." The Jews are the aristocrats of the world. For time immemorial, they have been persecuted and have seen their persecutions come and go. They alone have survived, and so will history repeat itself, but that furnishes no reason why we should permit this reversion of a once great nation to the dark ages or fail to rescue these 600,000 human souls from the tortures of hell. We are proposing and have already gone far towards doing is to prosecute a purely defensive economic boycott that will undermine the Hitler regime and bring the German people to their senses by destroying their export trade on which their very existence depends. We propose to and are organizing world opinion to express itself in the only way Germany can be made to understand. Untermyer then proceeded to provide his largely fantastic and hysterical address by declaring that with the support of Christian friends, we will drive the last nail in the coffin of bigotry and fanaticism. Oh, they're going to use Christians to help. The Hitler regime originated and are fiendishly prosecuting their boycott to exterminate the Jews by placating Jewish shops. The Mother Emmanuel AME Church. You remember this? It happened last June. Middle last June, the news media informed the world of another apparently senseless mass murder taking place in America. The victims were all black men and women gathered in a historic church in where? Charleston, South Carolina. One of the oldest cities in the United States. According to the mainstream press and an army of commentators, the persecutor, allegedly a white male 21 years of age, blindsided a peaceful group of devoted Judeo-Christians gathered for Bible study and prayer. The pastor of the church, 41-year-old Clementa Pinckney, who was also a senator in the South Carolina legislature, had been utilized by his peers as, quote, the moral conscience of the General Assembly and the moral compass of the South Carolina Senate. When it comes to the media and to the government, things are not always as they are made to appear. Manipulation of the public mind occurs daily. This is especially true where atrocities occur that serve a political agenda, such as the disarming of the Americans and the fomenting of racial strife, which will lead ultimately to anarchy and civil war in the streets and towns of America. The old order will be destroyed by inciting the citizens of the nation to attack one another, divide and conquer. Well, I'm going to try to bring us all together here. Scottish Rite Freemasonry in America traces its roots back to the same city of Charleston, South Carolina. In 1801, something happened there. A Kabbalistic Jew by the name of Hyman Isaac Long reportedly brought a statue of who? Baphomet? To Charleston, South Carolina, and established a foothold for Freemasonry there. If you think that is weird, last summer there was another revealing of a statue of Baphomet in the city of Detroit. In a sense, the statue is a stress test of American plurality. At what point does religious freedom make the people uncomfortable? How much are you going to tolerate? Here is a picture of Baphomet. What's this right here? The caduceus. These are female breasts. See, it's a goat head with male and female parts. And you have the caduceus right there for your insurance aid. This was a picture drawn by Eliphas Eli in his book, 1856. That's the best known image of Baphomet. But now I'm going to show you, here's the statue. It's all mixed up, isn't it? There's the statue. There's a boy and a girl. That's the statue that was revealed in Detroit. I think it was on June 15th when this came out, 2015, when they did this. It was the largest public satanic ceremony. July 25th it was, July 25th, 2015. Freemasonry would blossom later that century when a much more renowned Freemason, Albert Pike, also made this city his residence. Charleston, geographically, lies very close to the 33rd parallel, the north latitude. So does Baghdad, Iraq, which is formerly Babylon. The number 33 being the highest degree of Scottish Rite Freemasonry. It's tied into Babylon. The oldest lodge of any rite of Freemasonry in a nation is referred to as the Mother Lodge. The term mother is also used to denote the lodge where a Mason received his first degree. It is fitting that the Freemasons should call a church in Charleston as Mother, since this city is considered the original seat of the Mother Supreme Council of the world for the ancient and accepted Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. The Supreme Council, ancient and accepted Scottish Rite, Southern Jurisdiction, USA, commonly known as the Mother Supreme Council of the world, was the first Supreme Council of Scottish Rite Freemasonry. It claims that all other supreme councils and subordinate bodies of the Scottish Rite are derived from it. The Supreme Council, ancient and accepted Scottish Rite, Southern Jurisdiction, New USA, commonly known as the Mother Supreme Council of the world, was the first Supreme Council of Scottish Rite Freemasonry. It claims that all the other supreme councils and subordinate bodies of Scottish are derived from it. Its official name is the Supreme Council, Mother Council of the World, of the Inspectors General, Knights Commander of the House of the Temple of Solomon, the 33rd degree of the ancient accepted Scottish Rite of Freemasonry of the Southern Jurisdiction of the United States of America. It's also commonly known as Supreme Council, 33rd degree, Southern Jurisdiction. The Supreme Council was founded in Charleston, South Carolina in 1801. So in Charleston, South Carolina, we have the first Supreme Council of Freemasons. After Hyman Long's death, he was succeeded by Albert Pike. Now there is a unique individual. He could read and write in 16 languages. He communicated with Satan. Albert was born in 1809 and served in the Confederate Army. I think the Confederates would like to disown him. He was found to be traitorous, but was pardoned by President Johnson, who also was a 32nd degree Mason. 1859, most people don't know that Albert was chosen to bring the New World Order in the United States. He used other Freemasons in an attempt to bring this to pass. Did you know that Otto Bismarck of Germany was a fellow Mason? As was Marzini of Italy and Palmerston in Great Britain. Now, another interesting story is about the black Freemasons. Prior to the American Revolutionary War, Prince Hall and 14 other free black men petitioned for admittance to the white Boston St. John's Lodge. They were turned down. Having been rejected by colonial Freemasons, Hall and the 14 others sought and were initiated into the Masonry by members of Lodge Number 441 of the Grand Lodge of Ireland on March the 6th, 1775. Hall and the other freemen founded African Lodge Number 1, and he was named Grand Master. It was some time before the African Lodge gained full rights as a Masonic Lodge to grant degrees and establish other lodges. African Freemasonry would eventually become known as Prince Hall Freemasonry after its leading founder member. The first charter that was granted to establish another lodge of Prince Hall Freemasonry was when Absalom Jones, a black man from Philadelphia, expressed interest in establishing a lodge there. In 1797, African Lodge Number 459 of Philadelphia received its charter. Now here comes the important part. Absalom Jones became the worshipful master of the lodge, and Richard Allen the first treasurer. It was these two men who founded the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the AME Church. The AME Church corralled the Free African Society, which Richard Allen, Absalom Jones, and the other free blacks established in Philadelphia in 1787. We said then that the genesis of the AME Church was closely tied to Freemasonry, for its founders were the first to bring Prince Hall Freemasonry to Philadelphia. The doctrines of Freemasonry are Luciferian, and the Lucifer is the god of this world to whom they swear allegiance. Moving forward to this present day, it's plainly discloses on the website of Mother Emanuel AME Church. A number of her past and present leaders are involved in Freemasonry. And looking at images of Mother Emanuel Church, not only does the building feature a prominent obelisk steeple, in which two of the church's past prominent leaders are buried, but there are Masonic symbols on the stained glass windows. I'm going to talk about that one right there. Look at that. Crown with a cross. It is likely not mere coincidence that the cross and the crown symbol in the above window from the Mother Emanuel Church is identical to the symbol used for the Knights Templar degree of Freemasonry right there. Was it also an innocent figure of speech to refer to the pastor of this church who was shot dead as the moral compass of the South Carolina Senate? Well, let's go down and connect the dots. Next page. It shouldn't be surprising to note the following are or were Freemasons. Jesse Jackson's a Freemason, Al Sharpton, Andrew Young, W.E.B. Du Bois, Booker T. Washington, Thurgood Marshall, Ken Blackwell for the Cincinnati people, he's a Freemason, Don King, and there's a whole bunch of others. Connect the dots. This means a lot to me. So what if the predominantly black AME churches are Freemasonic? What does that have to do with us? I should say with me it has a lot to do. And to Joyce also. The church that we grew up in was an American Baptist church. It had its origin in a movie theater. And from there, they progressed to a property where they built a church structure. My parents, or our parents, I should say, Joyce and our parents, were members of this church practically from its beginning. We went there when they were in the movie theater. At the age of 13, all three of us children were baptized and became members of that church. Now, here's where I'm tied all together. One of the deacons of this church was Robert L. I won't give his last name. Robert was one of the five brothers who grew up near our neighborhood, who went from rags to riches. They started in the dairy business and soon expanded into banks, bananas, and all types of financial businesses. Soon they were multi-millionaires. Robert and his wife were good friends of my mother and father. At my father's funeral, Robert spoke a few words of his appreciation of my father's life and cried openly. They both came to Randa and my wedding and gave us a gift. Imagine my surprise when I learned at the death of his eldest brother, whose name is Carl L., that the whole family were Freemasons. There's a big article and paper about the we had Freemasons in the church that I grew up in? Yes, we did. Carl L. was a member of another American Baptist church that was about 5 miles from the one that we belonged to. The sons of the five brothers at that time went to the Far East and became members of Eastern religions. They eventually came back and settled in Judeo-Christian churches. One of them, Keith L., was the sponsor of Cincinnati Hills Christian Academy, where I taught for 3 years. This is not a Christian school. They believe everything that the Freemasons teach. And so did my former church. The liberty, equality, and fraternity slogan that the Jewish Freemasons promote was ingrained in the head of every member of the church that I grew up in. But what happened to that church? As the neighborhood began to change, remember they destroyed all the homes around the ball fields from the river to up to about 5th Street. They tore them all down, Crosley Field. They had to move someplace. Well, they moved out in our neighborhood. So what happened? We went from a Jewish, Protestant, Catholic neighborhood to a lot of blacks moving in. The church decided to move to a more white area. They didn't say a white area, but that's where they moved to. They sold the church to an organization. What organization? An AME church. A Freemasonic black church bought the farmer church that I grew up in. That's another little unknown fact. In World War II, Germany said in 1934 that Freemasonry was controlled by international Jews and is useless to the Third Reich. It had already dissolved 13 lodges. Now, this is from 13 Lodges, Chicago Daily News Tribune. As the war escalated, Germany captured new territories and dissolved Masonic lodges under their newly established occupational regimes. After the Gestapo disbanded a lodge, it was ransacked for membership lists, important library and archival items, furnishings, and other culture artifacts. The Nazis used this confiscated materials to fuel their anti-Masonic propaganda campaign. They set up anti-Masonic exhibitions throughout occupied Europe with stolen artifacts attempting to create fears of a Jewish Masonic conspiracy. Eventually, along with having their lodges forced to close, many prominent Masons were sent to concentration camps. Ah. Which forced many Freemasons to go underground. While Freemasonry was being suppressed in Nazi-controlled Europe, Freemasons in the free world emerged as key leaders in the Allied fight against Nazi expansion. The heads of state for both Great Britain and the United States were Freemasons. Great Britain, Churchill, and King George VI were Masons. I might add the Soviet Union. Joseph Stalin was a Freemason also. United States, President Franklin Roosevelt and Harry S. Truman were Masons. Truman was a big Mason. He was not afraid to show he was a Mason. Many of the generals of the United States Armed Forces were Freemasons, too. Three of the most prominent ones were General Douglas MacArthur, General Omar Bradley, and General Henry Hap Arnold. I say, what? My goodness. The head leaders of Great Britain, the Soviet Union, the United States were members of the Freemasons. They brought a statue of Baphomet to start the organization in Charleston, South Carolina. But Freemasons came from Babylon. Ah, just like the Jewish Kabbalah came from Babylon. What? Great Britain, the Soviet Union, the United States had Freemasons running their country, while Germany was putting prominent Freemasons in concentration camps and closing Freemasonic lodges. Are we beginning to see who's running who? Was the war really a war of pro-Masons against the anti-Masons? Or pro-Jewish against anti-Jewish? Whoa. My conclusion. Last Wednesday, at Fountain Square in Cincinnati was an all-women interfaith prayer service where they prayed for peace. Did you know that? The Cincinnati Enquirer, of course, gave it front page coverage. The quotes are from the article. Quote, it was a mixed crowd. Religions, races, cultural backgrounds, bowing their heads together in prayer Wednesday afternoon, uniting to promote unity and peace. My comment, it was a mixed up crowd of deceived people who were bowing their heads to a false god. Now back to the article, quote, female leaders from 10 religions took turns leading prayers on a small stage set up on Fountain Square for the interfaith prayer service sponsored by, number one, the American Jewish Committee. You know the Jews would sponsor something like this. Number two, the Islamic Center of Greater Cincinnati. Number three, Christ Church Cathedral. That's Roman Catholic. That's a good mixture. Jewish, Islam, and Catholic. The article quoted a few of the 10 speakers. Here's a couple of the quotes. First, from the vice president of the American Jewish Committee, she said, we, as Jews, certainly know how dangerous religious intolerance can be. It's an issue that should be important to all Americans. They should know. Then there was a Baptist lady, Barbara Lynch, New Jerusalem Baptist Church. Can you believe this? She asked God to, quote, enable us to see beyond ethnicity, race, color, religious persuasions, and to remember that you created us all from one blood. When I read one blood, I thought Answers in Genesis is doing a good job. We pray that the words carved on the statue of the lady in the harbor, that's Statue of Liberty, and that's the words from the Jew, Ezra Lazarus, may be carved on our hearts. So that all people of God's, whether red, white, black, yellow, and brown, that's five races. Answers in Genesis, we got three people groups. We'll be welcome on these shores to be safe and able to live productive lives. Oh, the Baptists are full of Freemasons. Oh, Reverend Sharon K. Dittmar of the First Unitarian Church said, "This is America. My reading of the Constitution is that no religion can be excluded. And if they are excluded, then I'm going to go sit with them." Then there were Hindu prayers were sung in Sanskrit. Many in the crowd hummed the tune, despite not knowing the language. Some raised their arms and murmured soft accolades as women of Baptist, Buddhist, Catholic, Episcopalian, Hindu, Jewish, Mormon, Muslim, Sikh, Unitarian. These 10 persuasions led in giving of prayers. The article quoted the Islamic Center, a lady who said, quote, "This is America, and this is what should be known, respected, and valued. We can be who we are and still be Americans. Whatever race, whatever religion." That would include the Baphomet religion, wouldn't it? Whatever culture background that you bring, this is what makes America great. The new Cincinnati Women's Choir led the crowd in song, and they chanted that they will not bow down to racism, injustice, or exploitation. The crowd slowly grew louder as they learned the words and clapped along with the beat. There's enough things in this article that would make a great sermon. I'll ask a question. Would this group be tolerant to those who are intolerant? What belief are they not tolerant to? Any white person who has a belief that is racist in origin, who believes that the Bible is racist, is who they are not tolerant to. They are saying that the United States was wrong in not allowing the Mormons to enter statehood until they dropped their doctrine of having different wives at the same time. They should have said no statehood and the Mormonism is dropped, for it teaches its men, like Freemasonry, how to become a god. The Jew says that Jesus Christ was the offspring of a Roman soldier and the whore Mary. He was a bastard and the worst thing that has ever happened to Israel. He is now in hell paying for his evil deeds. The nations of Europe expelled them many times for the murder of Jesus Christ, for blood ritual murders, and for usury banking. Unitarian Church has been a thorn in the side of true Israel for many generations. They were a leader in the abolition movement, feminist movement, and believe that Jesus Christ is not God. Descendants of Ishmael, the Muslim, believe that Jesus Christ was a prophet like Moses and Muhammad. They deny the deity of our Savior. And the leaders of every group was a woman. How far we have traveled away from the laws of God. Why do we have to be tolerant of all groups and religions? The Bible tells us not to. For we will only be a great nation when we keep the laws of our God. I'll conclude by reading Deuteronomy chapter 4, verses 7 and 8. For what nation is there so great, who has God as near unto them as the Lord our God is in all things that we call upon him for? What nation is there so great that has statutes and ordinances as righteous as all this law which I set before you this day? That's a great nation. Not multicultural. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel. Amen.